for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
And I'm Sam.
And we are covering this week Rebels Season 3, Episodes 7 and 8, Imperial Super Commandos.
Super Commandos.
One word. And Iron Squadron.
Two words.
Yeah, don't know how you would successfully smush those ones together.
How do we start off?
Well, if you were wondering how our prisoner of war from season two was doing, we get an answer to that question.
Which one?
The Rebels have a singular prisoner of war, and it is Fenn Rau.
Formerly of the Concord Dawn Protectors, noted Mandalorian fighter ace who shot down Hera at the beginning of season two.
Yeah, he did shoot down Hera, didn't he? It was a very convoluted plot. The Rebellion needs safe passage through Mandalorian airspace, so they kidnapped Fenn Rau. He's the leader of Concord Dawn, which is like one of the moons.
Yeah, so Concord Dawn is this moon with a bite out of it, and it has it like acts as the way station, and apparently the protectors are drawn from all the Mandalorian clans.
And he has now been imprisoned by the Rebels for, what, 8 months?
At least that,
on the Rebel command ship?
His hair's grown in, yeah.
So, the only reason we are checking in with Fenn Rau and not leaving him undisturbed in his Rebel cell is that they have lost contact with Concord Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sabine and Ezra take Fenn Rau there.
And Chopper.
And Chopper. To, I guess, check in on what's going on. He promptly distracts them both and knocks them out. Toot sweet.
Mm-hmm.
They are on the floor. When they come to, they see Fenn Rau just standing there on a ridge, staring because the entire base has been destroyed and everybody is dead.
Yeah, and they pretty rapidly figure out what's going on.
Yeah, at first they think maybe it was the Empire, because Fenn Rau allowing Rebel passage through the airspace is not exactly an Imperial thing to do. But it's not the Empire exactly. It's a bunch of Mandalorians who have turned over to the Empire.
And in fact, here they come right now.
Yeah. They zoom in on jetpacks, and we see that they're led by someone named Gar Saxon.
Who we've met before.
We've met Gar Saxon?
Gar Saxon is the ubermensch blonde boy who broke Maul out of Palpatine's prison, reinstated him on the throne of Mandalore, and then during season 7 gets his butt handed to him by Bo-Katan. He kills Jesse, and then he's running through the sub-basement.
That was Gar Saxon?
That was Gar Saxon. So this is him 15 years later.
Why did I think that was some other blonde meathead Mandalorian?
Well, that's who this is.
Interesting. Okay, well, it is the blonde meathead Mandalorian in question, Gar Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some kind of uppity title. Imperial Viceroy of Mandalore.
Something like that, yeah.
So Gar and his gang of Gar gangsters.
Super commandos.
Capture Ezra while Sabine and Rau hide. And as Gar Saxon is unsuccessfully trying to interrogate Ezra and Chopper, he reveals that he killed the entire Concord base, and he would have slaughtered Fenn Rau too if Fenn Rau had not been playing chess with the Rebels for a year. And Fenn overhears this, and even though he has been pissed at the Rebels this entire time, he's like, I declare a truce. Let's get Ezra free.
Mm-hmm.
Joke's on them. It is a lie.
So Fenn Rau skitters off in the newly christened Phantom II and flies away while Sabine smoke bombs the room that Ezra and Chopper are in and escapes.
Yeah, so it is Ezra and Sabine against 5 angry Mandalorians wearing jetpacks.
So we have an absolutely thrilling canyon jetpack running chase.
Yeah, Sabine stole a jetpack of her own, iconic, and on her signal chopper blasts all of the Mandalorian's comm signals with feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So she grabs Ezra, they blast off. There is an absolutely phenomenal canyon chase scene. Probably one of the most thrilling pieces of animation I've ever seen. Ezra's like dangling from Sabine's arm. He's deflecting blaster bolts. He's jumping onto Mandalorians and cutting off their jetpacks and then jumping back into Sabine's arms.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I think he ends up surfing Chopper.
Yeah, he falls and lands on Chopper, and Chopper's like, rrr, rrr, and he's like, I know that was an accident.
What do I look like, a boogie board? And it's all going spectacularly until right as they get to Gar Saxon's ship, he blasts them out of the sky. And it is looking very bad for our friends until Fenrau soars in and loudspeakers out, those kids are my babies. Get your mitts off. That's not what he says.
He says, those kids are under my protection.
Oh, so good. He's their daddy now. He swoops in. He grabs Ezra and Chopper while Sabine hand-to-hand combats Gar Saxon and is better than him in every way.
Yeah. So Fenrau blows up all of the rest of the Mandalorians while Sabine is dueling Gar Saxon, and she slashes his jetpack so he is unable to fly. Then she flies off, is rescued by the Phantom, and at the last minute, her jetpack is shot, and Ezra has to capture her.
So they make their getaway, and Fenrau says, I was going to leave you, but I realized that you are willing to die for your people, even though they're not Mandalorian. You haven't forgotten our ways, and I would like to be rebel curious, too.
He's full rebel now.
Sabine is like, welcome to the family.
Yeah, like impossible odds, overwhelming force to go with, unlimited weapons budget. Like, yeah.
Sign me up.
Make it happen.
Yeah, so. I did get a little misty, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, I got misty in both of these. So that leads us right into the next one.
You got misty in Iron Squadron?
I did.
Fascinating. Tell me why.
Okay, so Iron Squadron starts off, and the Rebels are doing a mission subtype 3 Charlie, which is we are rescuing the Rebels and Rebel Curious people from this planet before the Empire shows up. Bippity boppity. So they fly in, and as they do, they watch a YT-2400 freighter just getting harassed by TIE fighters and a Gazanti. And they're like, hey, we should go rescue them. The YT-2400 does a 180, floops in, flies past the TIE fighters, unleashes a whole bunch of shipping containers full of explosives on the Gazanti, and is like, hooray, we win, and is really snarky. So while much of the Ghost crew goes down to finish the mission, Hera, Ezra, and a few others end up on this ship, which we learn right before they meet up that it is Jun Sato, Commander Sato's nephew's ship, and his brother, this ship's former captain, died on Mycapo, the planet they're over. And so it'd be super great if they can get the nephew out of this.
Along with his gang of disaffected youths.
Yeah, so they board this ship. It is practically on fire on the inside. It is falling completely apart.
Hey, that's how we like it.
And the combined age of everyone on this ship is under 40, including the droid. So it's rough.
And they have the most Star Wars names we've heard in a while. There's Gooty, Johnner, and Mart. Mart is the aforementioned nephew.
So Mart is very proud. He's like, I don't need your help. We just blew off a Star Destroyer. And everyone else is like, that was definitely not a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
Star Destroyers are like 40 times that big.
Very prideful. Not very smart for someone who has 4 letters of that word in their name.
And they don't have a working hyperdrive. But they can't convince the crew of Iron Squadron to leave, so they're ready to take off. As they are, Ezra says, hey, I have a plan. Chopper, Sabine, and I can fix the hyperdrive and maybe, like, get them free for when the Empire shows up. And Hera's like, okay, fine. So they take the Phantom, they land, they start working on the hyperdrive, they get it fixed, and then Mart redirects it to weapons. And just then, the B-plot ensues. The B-plot is Thrawn hears that the ghost was sighted near My Capo and says, Admiral Constantine, you are on the list for punishment. Please take one light cruiser and a small escort and go solve the My Capo problem. It's just one freighter. Surely you won't run into any problems, foreshadowingly. So Admiral Constantine shows up on a light cruiser at Articons and two Gazantes with a ton of TIE fighters. And it's like, okay, we gotta go. We gotta bounce. And so Sabine, Ezra, Chopper, and Jonner and Goody board the Phantom and take off.
Every time I hear Jonner and Goody, I can't with
the real
these
dumb names. But Mart seals them and ejects them at the last minute. He's going to finish the mission. So he flies off. He runs through the Gazantes. He runs through the TIE fighters. He unleashes his full cargo load of improvised explosive devices on top of the Articons cruiser, which scratches the paint slightly. And he's like, oh, no, I don't have this. He gets shot to pieces and the Phantom flies away. But Ezra says, we'll come back for you. So they get back to the Rebel base and Sato's like, real bummer about my son. This is a huge dishonor on me and my family. I'll go rescue him. And Hera's like, please do not. Let us do it. The ghost is perfect for this kind of thing. And Jonner and Goody are like, this is 100% a trap. And Ezra's like, it's a trap, but now we're not alone. We're teams. We're a team of Rebels. We all work together, unlike your stupid Captain Mart, who
Our
needs to
family
join us.
Is just better than your family. For Sorry real. About it.
So the ghost rolls in and starts rampaging across this. Constantine has laid a secret mine on top of Mart's ship. And the ghost is flying around and it airdrops the two droids that are on top of the Iron Squadron ship. And they detach the mine and attach it to one of the cargo containers.
They are the shining beacon of this episode. They're phenomenal.
Constantine is like, we need to wait until they're next to each other so I can blow them up with one mine to impress Thrawn. And Hera is like, we're having absolutely none of this. She swoops in, she cargo grapples Mart's ship, and then double fastball specials into the Articons class cruiser, the last remaining cargo pod, which detonates the mine. The ship starts going down in flames. And as this is all going on, Jun Sato has shown up in his Rebel command cruiser as reinforcements.
To save the dumbest boy in the galaxy.
So the good guys are all escaping when Thrawn rolls up in an actual Star Destroyer. Mart actually sees a Star Destroyer for the first time and is like, oh, beans. And Thrawn says, oh, no, you guys can go. Hey, Commander Sato, good to know where you live, what you care about, who your kids are, who their friends are.
Oh, no, I didn't put those pieces together.
Bye, Rebels. Switch the channel to Constantine. Constantine, do you need help? Your ship's on fire. You utter embarrassment of an Imperial officer. I sent you here to dishonor yourself, and you failed at even that. You didn't even have the decency to die during this mission. And that is Iron Squadron.
Oh, yeah. And there's a delightful hug between uncle and nephew, and the friends are reunited.
They land back on Adelon. The friends are reunited. Everyone's very happy. Sato and his nephew hug, and it's very sweet. And then very sweet little Easter egg, the very last the last frame of the episode, because the kids have actually been hugging for a long time as we zoom out into the bendosphere of Athlon. And the very last sound effect is Chopper just bonking the R3 unit super loud.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, I heard the sound and I'm like, what was that? And then I watch, it's just like a 4-pixel-high Chopper like zooms across and bonk.
There is so much in these episodes that I know I missed.
So let's start with what's going on in the Imperial Super Commandos.
Yeah, or Maybe we'll go a little bit wider.
Okay.
This is my, I mean, now this is my pressing question, having realized that I missed Chopper bonking someone, which is usually my favorite thing.
You also missed that Gar Saxon, this is not the first time we've seen him.
Yeah, Hundo P. So, okay, what are some Easter eggs that you think I might have missed in these episodes being a new fan slash having apparently a bad medium-term memory?
Okay, here's the biggest one. The ship, which was unnamed in the episode, the Iron Squadron ship, but is apparently named Sato's Hammer.
That's great.
Yeah. Is a YT-2400 from the Corellian shipyards. The Corellian shipyards made the YT-1300, which is the model that the Millennium Falcon is.
I was going to say the Iron Squadron ship looks just like a Millennium Falcon.
It's different, and here's why. So in the second half of the 90s, Lucasfilm said, we're re-releasing the special edition, and we're going to come out with the prequels.
And the special edition is of the original trilogy?
Yeah, so they went back and redid all the, they added a whole bunch of special effects to the original trilogy and started re-releasing them as sort of a buildup for the prequels, because it had been like 20 years, and it's like, hey, it's time to release the sequels. And they were just the hottest thing coming out. But what they did was they made this multimedia massive push. Now, importantly, throughout the 80s and 90s, LucasArts had, which was a division of Lucasfilm, had been making A-plus video games in the Star Wars universe. They were really, and not to mention a whole bunch of other point-and-click adventures.
Yeah, you loved playing the pod racer game.
So that this actually predates that. They made X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, X-Wing, TIE Fighter. They made a whole bunch of good games, including one. As part of this, they made this whole thing called The Shadows of the Empire. And what they did was they made a top-tier video game for the N64, which was pretty janky. I've actually played it recently, and it's before 3D graphics quite. So if you aim in like the right horizontal plane of an enemy, you'll shoot them even if they're way up or way down.
Aww.
Because it's from the like 1996.
That might actually allow me to win a video game if I didn't have to be actually pointing at the thing I wanted to shoot.
It's genuinely hard. I could not beat it. But it introduced a character named Dash Rendar, who was not Han Solo because he was blonder and beefier. And he flew a Corellian YT-2400, which is not the Millennium Falcon. It's faster and better.
What?
And he was in charge of stealing the plans for the second Death Star or something.
Mr. Steal Your Girl over
after,
here.
Yeah, after the Battle of Hoth in Empire Strikes Back. And so they made this whole books, video games, comic book series that occurred in between episodes 5 and 6 of the original trilogy.
Fascinating. Were they trying to bring him into the more established canon, do you think?
No, because this is before Pablo Hidalgo. I use a different word for this. Well, I'll say it on Spice Run, but he de-screwed the canon of Star Wars because it was really, really hairy before Pablo Hidalgo. You had like 5 different tiers of canonicity, starting with movies and then moving down and down and down. And so like video games were up there, but novels were up there, but some novels were not up there, and some of them were down and some of them were up. And comic books were pretty high, but sometimes they weren't. And video like it was just loops within loops within loops. And so they tried not to pollute new movies because at the time the actual canon of Star Wars was 3 movies. That's, well, 4 movies because the holiday special is canon. And that's it. And then they added a few, they had a whole bunch of non-canon movies and non-canon TV series even then, because they had the Droids TV series in the 80s. So they added more, but it was like part of this expanded universe. And this was the Lucasfilm or LucasArts version of the expanded universe. And they introduced the YT-2400, and it was awesome. And then they reintroduced it to canon in this episode.
It felt like the Millennium Falcon, except it wasn't quite as maneuverable, maybe. So I was picking up on, like, this is a Corellian mass-produced minivan that you can soup up of the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like a newer model, a better chassis a couple of years down the line. It's the F-250 compared to the F-150 or whatever.
And it has a bunch of, you know, youths riding around in it.
Notably, it did not have Dash Rendar in it, who's just like Han Solo with the body of Dolph Lundgren. So,
what are some other Easter eggs that you think I might have missed? So now we've moved past Gar Saxon. We've done the Krellian, YT, whatever.
Honestly, that's kind of it with Gar Saxon and his YT-2400, because those are kind of the heroes of both of these episodes. Fen Rao, like, so importantly for our watch through, in Universe Prime, this is the first time we're introduced to Gar Saxon. And so Gar Saxon has a couple moments where he's talking to Sabine and he's like, I know your mother. She joined with us. We learned a whole bunch about Mandalorian politics. What we see in Clone Wars Season 7 is that Gar Saxon and a whole bunch of red and black Mandalorians.
The Mandalorians.
Yeah, Gar Saxon is the leader of them. He has a cool pointy helmet.
No, I 100% remember now.
And so they were up to something, and apparently that faction is ascendant in Mandalorian politics now, because if he is the Viceroy of Mandalore, that functionally means that he's the Mandalorian in charge, and his power is given to him by the Empire.
So I was going to ask you about all of the Sabine nuggets we get. Mm. And one of them is about the dropped mention of Sabine's mom.
Yeah.
Like, my mom, your mother stands with the Empire. You're a disgrace to her. Do we think that Sabine's mom was one of the Mandalorians too?
You know, let's put a pin in that.
Interesting.
Yeah. When I watched Clone Wars Season 7 for the first time, I thought, yes. And then I thought, then I looked up names of people and I'm like, probably not, but the vast majority of Mandalorians keep their helmets on. So who knows?
I'm just curious because I'm thinking about the conversation that Fen Rao and Sabine have as they're scoping out to rescue Ezra.
Mm.
And Sabine says, Gar Saxon, where do I know that name from? And Fen Rao is like, I'm sure you find it familiar. He's Clan Vizsla.
Same as you. Mm-hmm.
House Ren, maybe not House Ren, but Clan Vizsla.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how, I don't want to say incestuous, but how intertwined all of these Mandalorian clans are.
So the Mandalorians, we learn a ton about Mandalorian culture in this from the conversations that Fen Rao and Sabine have. And it's this fun back and forth because right away, Ezra runs off. He's like, I'm the distraction. And Fen Rao's like, leave your friend. His sacrifice will give us time. And Sabine's like, he's actually really scary. Like, if we don't go rescue him, he's going to cause problems. And Fen Rao's like, well, I have his lightsaber. And so now he's got to do his fast talk thing. And that's what Ezra did. But in this conversation between Fen Rao and Sabine, we learn that the Protectors are sort of a pan-clan type of thing. And we learn that there's, by inference, that there's multiple clans that have different views. And some of the clans went with the Empire and some of them didn't. And each clan is presumably made up of subsidiary families. And those families are probably even larger than like an individual hereditary group. It's probably like a bunch of braided hereditary groups.
My head is literally spinning, but okay, continue.
So the fact that Sabine is like, okay, I know this Gar Saxon character. And then when Gar Saxon talks to her, he says, your defection from the Empire brought great dishonor on your family.
Is that what he's talking about mm-hmm. when he references her traitorous past?
Yes.
So she's a traitor from his point of view.
Because their clan, Clan Vizsla, is aligned with the Empire. And so Gar Saxon is presumably the leader, maybe not of the clan, but he's part of the clan and is the leader of Mandalore.
Are all Mandalorians now with the Empire?
Well, no, because this is this is the first time that Ezra gets to see Concord Dawn out the viewport of the Phantom II, right before he gets stunned by Fen Rao. And he's like, look at that planet. It's shaped like Pac-Man. What happened? And Sabine is like, Mandalorians have a long history of war, mostly with themselves. Mm-hmm. And so presumably there's clan wars back and forth, that all these clans are continuously fighting amongst each other. So do all Mandalorians work for the Empire? No. Does someone who has a good claim to be the leader of Mandalore work for the Empire? Yes. Gar Saxon also reveals, in interesting internal Mandalorian politics, that he was ready to kill the Protectors this whole time, and especially once he knew that they were giving in to the rebels. And so he was waiting for Fen Rao to come back and got impatient, and then he wiped them out. But that, because the Protectors were like a pan-Mandalorian group, shows that he's like no longer inhabiting this space of being primarily Mandalorian, and he's moved into the space of being primarily an Imperial agent.
Okay, so two questions. One, why does Gar Saxon care about Fen Rao, and why was he trying so hard to kill him? That's actually one question. I know it sounded like two, but it was one.
Okay. So presumably because Fen Rao, so if the Protectors are a pan-clan organization, that means that they are like very honorable in an honor-based society, right? Because it is where people form unification between clans. And that means that their leader is someone who is well-respected and also outside the normal structures of power. So this is someone who has a voice in power, but they don't have, but it's like pure soft power that they have. And he had a bunch of fighters and a bunch of like starfighters, fighters and starfighters to fly them. But he didn't have like significant hard power or money projection, but he was a voice. If he showed up at some like conclave of Mandalorian clans, it's like, I'm Fen Rao, I'm the Protector of Concord Dawn, and my vote goes here. And they're like, whoa, there's only like 13 votes at this table. And he's like, and one of them is mine. Mm-hmm. Because there's, you know, some probably small amount of clans that have enough power to actually make policy decisions for Mandalore as a whole.
Yeah, they're like Rhode Island. They do have at least one delegate.
Yeah. But the Protectors are separate from that. And there's actually a neat analog to this in the Shield Societies of the Plains Native Americans starting in the 1700s, in that after the after Columbian contact, there was a vast depopulation of the North American continent. And Athabascan people from Alaska started coming south and filling up the plains as nomadic people. And in order to create peace between these tribes, it stretched from like Montana to Michigan. You had Shield Brother societies where people from different clans who had like had bad blood between them, or had like, if I murdered your brother as penance, we would both join the Shield Brothers for the rest of our lives.
Oh, interesting.
And our job would be to be ambassadors to all of the tribes. And so we learned the pan-tribe languages and the sign languages, and we were defenders of all the tribes, and we carried the stories between them.
Well, so that brings up my second question, which is that by killing this pan-Mandalorian group, mm-hmm. does Gar Saxon not then become the target of like every other clan's wrath?
That's just the thing. He probably wants to install a puppet, because Mandalorians have a high mortality rate.
He wants to install a puppet over the Protectors, but the Protectors are all dead.
Yeah.
And he himself is a puppet. Empire.
Well, yeah, it's projection, but he presumably wants to install a pro-Empire Protectors organization, or he wants to like assume the title of Protector for himself. He's Viceroy of Mandalore and Protector of Concord Dawn and Duke of, you know, Sundari Gar Saxon.
Interesting. So, okay, so you kill all of the senators and representatives of Rhode Island, and you put in your own senators mm-hmm. and representatives of Rhode Island, and then all of a sudden Rhode Island is voting Your for way. Whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Rhode Island. This is just like the smallest state that I could think of at the tip of a hat.
Yeah, but they have two senators and a representative. So they count, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
That is the Mandalorian politics as I read it. I'm kind of deep into this type of thing because we're doing an Legends of the Five Rings campaign for my D&D group, which is you are a samurai, you belong to a family, you belong to a clan, you have an honor rating. So it's like that is one of the elements which is pulled for the Mandalorians.
Well, I actually think it's really nice that you bring up the idea of not just clan, but family. Mm-hmm. Because I think family was one of the major unifying themes across both of these episodes.
Oh, very much so.
Family and also found family, right? Like there is a little moment when Ezra and Sabine and Chopper all make it back. And then in the second episode, Ezra slings one arm around Sabine and one arm around Chopper, mm-hmm. right? And in my head, my first thought was, oh, look, a beautiful millennial couple and their dog. Right?
Chopper's definitely a cat, but yeah.
100%. I can't believe I didn't think of that. But yeah, they're a little family within their larger family. Mm-hmm. And then I think Sabine and Fen Rao formed another smaller family unit in Imperial Super Commandos because they were each other's only ties to their culture and their history. And Fen Rao comes over to the Rebellion because Sabine has reminded him of where he comes from.
I think that's principles and practice. I think that Fen Rao, I mean, so we start off that episode and Fen Rao and Sabine are playing Mandalorian chess, which involves moving knives on a cube, which is classic. And he has always been this person who really believes in the principles of Mandalorian life. And that is why he took this role, despite the fact that it has no personal power for himself. He is the protector of Concord Dawn. And he's like, I do this job and I have become a hostage to the Rebellion and therefore I protect my people. Like he is a military leader, but he does all these things logically for him, following in line with his code of honor. And then Sabine shows him that a code of honor exists for a reason. A code of honor exists to help people.
Mm.
And he's like, I see that now. I was out of practice because I was just gutting down everyone for the Empire and training my pilots and like practicing, you know, preaching the way of the Mandalore, but I wasn't practicing it. And you're like pretty, you know, your Mandalorian fundamentals, Sabine, are pretty sus, but you help people and you do it with like always being there for your friends and force of arms and cleverness. So like...
And strategy.
Oh my gosh.
Even though it takes longer.
There's a great line. She rescues Ezra and he's like, where were you? I was using strategy. It takes longer.
You meathead with your muscles and your lightsaber.
Well, I mean, that's I don't think that's an indictment on Ezra. I think it's actually a growth point for Sabine because Ezra's like, I kind of expected you to smoke bomb everyone and like blow up the moon to rescue me. And here you are like, I was using strategy. It takes longer. It's funny. It's a moment of growth for her.
Yeah. I think we are really seeing Sabine come into greater power mm-hmm. and greater cleverness and greater strategy, which is really fun. I was just thinking about her and Fen Rao as a sort of family unit because at the very end of the episode, Sabine says, welcome to the family.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting thing that we've been talking about strategy because I've been reading the Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi, which I recommend for everyone. And he often refers to the way of strategy. And what he means by that is the way of living as a warrior. And that, like, the fact that strategy comes up in these episodes, it's almost as if they're speaking in the code of Bushido, saying that strategy is the way of the warrior. And so this transformation to incorporate, like, actual rebellion and take this code of honor and be like, and now put these principles into practice, I think is one of the main themes of this episode.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about strategy or lack thereof. Would you like to talk about the other family unit of these episodes?
The Iron Squadron.
What do you think? What do you think about the Iron Squadron?
They're war orphans.
Warfans? No, that's tragic.
It's truly tragic. And we get that right away, that Jun Sato, commander of the Phoenix Cell, is like, my brother died.
Yeah, it's not just that Mart doesn't have a dad. It's that a beloved character from our canon also lost his brother.
And Sato is like pretty taciturn about all of this, but he recognizes that it would be really nice if his nephew was back. And then we see in Mart a lot of Sato.
Interesting. Tell me what qualities could possibly be in Mart that are in Jun Sato.
So Mart, using a basically marginally functional freighter, kept chasing off and fighting off the Empire considerably, enough for it to attract Thrawn's notice.
Okay, so he's scrappy, he's resourceful, he's effective.
And he's rebounding his internal sense of his effectiveness because he's doing something his father couldn't, which is be alive. He is alive, and so therefore he is traumatized enough to believe that living is enough. And this is the whole conversation that Ezra is having with all of them the whole time. As soon as Ezra shows up, he's like, I know that you're afraid. And they're like, we're not afraid of anything. He's like, I was afraid on Lothal until I made friends. It's all about being friends. You need to make friends. You need to have people to watch your back.
And they're like, mur, 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 we have friends. Look, we have two friends.
Yeah.
Each. Because there's three of us.
Yeah. And a droid. But yeah. It's and that's the point that Ezra is trying to get across the whole time, that you need to be part of something larger and you can't just rely on yourself. And once Mart learns that lesson and once he learns to have faith, then he is rescued.
Yeah, at great cost and great risk to the rebellion.
It was great risk. It wasn't great cost.
They definitely burned some petrol to get over there, but yeah. It's just that they're always short on fuel. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you go herring off halfway across the galaxy for this dumb boy.
They also killed the rest of Constantine's career. So that's funny.
That is maybe worth it. Although, just for the pettiness.
You know, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. They should be like, Admiral Constantine, we are going to protect you and keep you alive because you're the most ineffective person around. But yeah, they just embarrassed him. And it's the fact that Thrawn shows up in two scenes. And at the very end, he's like, hey, I know where you live. Smiley face. Like, that is so scary.
I really had not put together all that he was learning about Jun Sato.
Yeah, well, he's pulling a RICO case on them. He's pulling a wartime RICO case on these rebels because he starts off with, you know, finding out about Hera and moving up to Sato. He's rolling up the chain of command, trying to track what's going on. I mean, he honestly started off with Ezra, right? When Ezra blew up those mining guild TIE fighters, who is under the influence of Sith holocron juice.
Oh no!
And so because Ezra was juiced up on holocron juice, that he killed two Mining Guild TIE Fighters, and Thrawn is like, you have my attention. And then he just starts sending out little feelers, and he's like, who's your boss? And who's your boss? And who's your boss? And where do they live? And now he knows where Jun Sato lives.
Let me talk to your manager. Oh, your manager lives down the street?
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yeah, so that's fun.
I guess that makes Iron Squadron feel a little bit less like a filler episode. It reminded me of a poor man's Jedi Younglings arc where, you know, when Ahsoka's training the babies.
I think you just choose that because the names are the same. It's another episode with goofy names.
No, they were perfect. Biff and Pietro. Gnudi.
Gnudi.
Gnudi is actually way funnier.
Yeah.
I wish her name had been Gnudi. Could have made a bunch of noodle jokes. No, but in those episodes, each youngling kind of gets their chance to shine, and they're shiny and new, and they're ingenues, right? And you really root for them. Mm-hmm. But the Iron Squadron are teenagers, and so they're automatically less charming and more annoying.
You're pretty harsh on the youth.
They are like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I mean, I could put together probably an hour-long special of Growing Up Skywalker, Anna is harsh on the youth.
Yeah, unless they are my babies from the Ahsoka and the Younglings arc, in which case they've never done anything wrong in their entire lives.
You only seem to like kids when they're between the ages of like 8 and 11.
That is a nice age for a kid.
You say that.
Having been an 8-year-old to an 11-year-old, I was charming.
Okay, I'll take your word on it.
I don't know about you, Sam.
No, I was a troublemaker from birth. Like, my very first memory is of me getting grounded. It took years and years for me to de-traumatize myself from just the idea of being a troublemaker. And, you know, Mart had to sit there and be like, trouble's all I got.
Yeah, you would fit right in with these Iron Squadrons.
Although I could probably fix their hyperdrive on like their worthless R3 unit. Although that hyperdrive fixing scene is a gem. Because,
why?
Okay, so we start off, our Chopper rolls through and he's like, I can fix your hyperdrive. And the R3 unit is like, you cannot enter my kitchen. And they get into a fight. And then Ezra's like, just let it go. And Chopper's like, fine, I'll let it go. So then Ezra leads the rescue mission and the R3 unit's working on it. Sabine's working on it. Chopper has a sledgehammer. And he's just bonking. He's just bonking. So he's like, I don't know what you did to this prime hyperdrive, a finely tuned instrument of interstellar travel. I need a sledgehammer to fix this.
I need to lasso a Purrgle and let them tow us.
It's genuinely like watching someone with the hood of a truck open and a sledgehammer just hammering at something like, what are you doing that this is fixing it? What went wrong that this is fixing it? Yeah, that amuses me greatly.
It is a piece of junk. The only thing that was missing was like old pizza.
See, and what I love about that is that the YT-2400 in the expanded universe Shadows of the Empire was like, it's the Millennium Falcon, but newer and better, and it's got double armor, and it like holds 6 in luxury comfort, and it can be run by an AI, and it has powerful turbo lasers, and it costs only 20% more, and this thing's like, it is equally a piece of junk to the original trilogy Millennium Falcon. And it just goes to show that once you drive it off the lot, you know, it's up to the owner.
And if the owner is a bunch of youths.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why, like, the Millennium Falcon, as driven by Han and Chewie, is a hunk of junk. But as driven by Lando, it's, like, a premium experience.
Yeah, it has a cape closet.
Yeah.
So I do have a fun fact about our Iron Squadron babes. Mm-hmm. They're all named after the producers of the Rebels Recon TV show that gives us background information into Rebels. Mm-hmm. So Goody is named after Andy Gutierrez, who's the host, who we love.
We do love her because that's been one of the really fun parts about watching Rebels is the Rebels Recon. It's a ton of fun. And check it out on, where do we watch it, StarWars.com?
Yeah, they're delightful. They're 8 minutes every week. You get to watch background footage on all the episodes. Andy Gutierrez is a delight. Mm-hmm. Goody, just as a name, cracks me up. And then I think Mart's last name is Matin.
Yeah.
Because he was named after the producer named Matt Martin. He was Mart Matin.
Classic.
And I don't remember Jonner.
Jonner is hilariously dumb. And I like that Hera's like, you, big guy, go help the droids. He's like, okay. Like,
he's just linebacker shaped and linebacker brained.
Just one of those like 8th graders who's 6'3" already. And you're like, I guess your lot in life is pretty well chosen.
He's like Brasso. I'm just a big clumsy guy.
You know,
except Brasso's the best.
The rebellion needs big clumsy guys. Sometimes you just need someone to I mean, that's Zeb's job, right? He's just like, sometimes stormtroopers need yeeting.
Zeb is graceful and has four opposable thumbs. Two of them are on his feet.
Oh, I mean, yes.
The man could do open heart surgery with his toes.
He opens hearts with his toes, that's for sure. Opens rib cages, but...
He opens Agent Callus's heart.
Oh my gosh.
I'm never going to let it go, Sam.
You're never going to let it go. Oh, speaking of Callus, what do you think that the rest of the Empire is up to this time?
Yeah, there was a lot that was happening off screen in this episode, which also made it feel a little thin. Like, Kanan just had nothing to do for these two episodes, right?
He really didn't.
He blew up so many TIE fighters as a person who cannot see. And they were like, okay, bye, Kanan. Talk to you later.
He's like, okay, I guess I'm going to go rescue all these peeps.
Yeah. So what are Price and Callus up to? I don't know. Licking Thrawn's boots? Chasing after his coattails, trying to be the best lackeys they can? I don't know.
I find that interesting that, like, there's so many levels of command because Price seems to be 100% fine with Thrawn just like continuously letting the rebels go and no one else is. And I find that really interesting. I wonder where Callus falls on that line.
I mean, my answer is that Callus is also rebel curious due to, you know, being in love with Zeb.
Letting Sabine go and Wedge and...
Yeah, that was because Bobby. Of love.
Okay.
But Price, I don't know. Price to me feels like a proto Deidre Miro. She does feel very capable. And she did torture Sabine with great glee.
She tried to.
Yeah. She successfully tortured Wedge.
she successfully got tortured on her own. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, there was a lot that Iron Squadron as an episode kind of made us do on our own. Like, kind of seeing the good in the Iron Squadron kids and filling in the gaps on what's happening down on the ground of Mycoppo. And there's a lot of work that we had to do as viewers. And I think maybe that's why it felt kind of unsatisfying to the point where now I'm like, okay, well, Mart had such an unsatisfying story that surely he's going to grow up and be some great hero of the rebellion. And then it'll be a really strong, interesting character arc where we end up somewhere different from where we started. Because right now, he's just kind of a disenfranchised nephew.
I felt like the strength of Iron Squadron was in giving Ezra the opportunity to really show all that he has learned as far as being a rebel and putting together, like, it's more important than friendship. It's being organized.
Oh, like the Iron Squadron kids were supposed to be foils to Ezra and show how he used to be like them and now he has grown because of his family?
I mean, Ezra and Mart are literally one haircut apart. Like...
Very unfortunate haircut for both of them.
Well, yeah, but Ezra used to have the long hair and was running with his friends and having a crew, and his parents are dead, and he used to just, like, scam the Empire and didn't know that there was a larger fight going on.
Well, but Ezra was alone.
Ezra was alone, and then he made friends, but then at the end of season one, his friend group got a lot bigger, and he's like, yeah, your friend group needs to get a lot bigger too. Like, he's sitting there reading Nemec's manifesto. Like, you are a part of the battalion of people who is against the Empire and doesn't know it yet. You don't realize you're part of an army. So please realize you're part of an army. We have better food than your space waffles.
That was waffles, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It looked like it was frozen space waffles that were still frozen.
Just frozen Eggos.
Just frozen. Jonner's like, give me the waffles.
No, he's like, please have some frozen space waffles. And Hera's like, really? I could not. I will not.
I'm not eating anything out of this. Just pigsty of a ship.
Yeah, they were fun. I wish if someone was going to say Goody's the best pilot in the galaxy, Goody got a chance to be a pilot. But she did not.
Goody was the engineer. Mart was the pilot.
Mart said Goody's the best pilot in the galaxy.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. See? There were loose plot threads all over this episode, Sam.
I guess so. Maybe it's just like the original Shadows of the Empire, where they're like, we're going to make video games, we're going to spread it all out, we're going to invent all sorts of characters, and we're just going to never do anything with it. We got like whole other TV series we could spool off with this.
Yeah, you got to flesh out your galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. But it was really fun to see that ship in the universe again.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one.
Could have been the Falcon. Tragically,
it would have been really fun if it was a YT-1300. Just like,
yeah, I mean, we heard Mart's voice over the radio when Hera's like, hey, yo, YT cruiser, let us help you. And Mart is like, thanks, we don't need your help. And mm-hmm. I was like, it looks like the Falcon. It sounds like a young man. What's our timeline here? Could that be Han Solo? And it straight up was not.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, looking forward to the original trilogy, that wouldn't really jive with Han Solo's character arc, but it would have been a fun curveball if it had been a Millennium Falcon class ship.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
But we got to introduce a ton of stuff about the Mandalorians, which I love because that's like pure Dave Filoni. You know, you take like the entire concept of a Mandalorian is someone saw Boba Fett in the original trilogy and like, who's this cool guy? Let's make an entire like third faction of the galaxy about him. Let's connect it with Maul. And Dave Filoni's like, I'm going to take this third of the galaxy. It's mine now. And introduce like cool Mandalorian stuff and have it connect. And then they brought Gar Saxon in for season 7 of the Clone Wars and showed him doing what got him to be the Imperial Viceroy, which is that he is the most conniving Mandalorian.
Yeah, I guess I just thought Gar Saxon died, and he did not. He sort of raced off into the sunset wearing his cool armor.
Yeah, and here he is wearing considerably less cool armor.
Yeah, no horns on this one.
And getting beat up by like a 17-year-old girl.
I mean, Sabine had him.
She really did.
From the first blow.
Yeah. And then she like does these cool moves to be like, oh no, don't punch me. I've already knocked your jetpack off. So I'm just going to slip you off the edge of this cliff. He's like, oh no, my jetpack. Because she's used to fighting without a jetpack. And now that she has one, she's like, ah, yeah. What, do you think her jetpack's going to be working? Because it does get shot at the end.
You know, if we could bring back Chopper's best friend from the brink of droid death, I'm assuming we could repair a jetpack. And Sabine with a jetpack is way scarier than Sabine without a jetpack. And
that's
Sabine's
true.
Pretty scary without a jetpack.
Yeah, we're really seeing a lot of her do cool stuff this season, and I love it. She takes out a bunch of super commandos. She, like, has really no problem at any point during this other than her own internal dialogue and her dialogue with Fenn Rau, which is like, hey, are you still a Mandalorian? And she's like, probably? Like, I think I'm a Mandalorian. He's like, okay, I guess we're Mandalorians together then, which is like a really... It's a really interesting way to recruit someone to the rebellion. It's way different from the last time she did a recruitment with Ketsu Onyo.
Yeah. Well, she did attraction, not promotion.
There you go.
And it really worked. And now they're one big happy family.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of happy families, would you like to add someone else to the happy family that is our list of Bays?
Either someone else or someone who's already there. Let's do it. It's time for Baywatch.
Time for Baywatch.
All right. Who is your bay for these episodes?
You know, I'm not going to throw any curveballs on this one. I'm throwing significantly fewer curveballs than my bay for this week.
Okay.
It's going to be Sabine.
Good choice.
Absolutely, it's got to be Sabine.
Great choice.
She duels a 45-year-old man and makes him look like a fool.
That's true.
She dangles her friend from one hand while she zip flies down a canyon and he is deflecting blaster bolts like a pro. Did you see that move where Ezra like lets go and slashes off a Mandalorian helmet and Sabine races up to a cliff, decelerates and kicks off of it like she just did a flip turn at the pool?
Yep.
And grabs Ezra again?
Yeah, it was cool.
That was bonkers.
And she's got a bunch of cool stuff going on in Iron Squadron. She's there to, like, make sure that everyone's sane. And importantly, she does stick to the mission because Ezra's like, oh, no, we can't leave Mart behind. We're going to help him. And Sabine's like, you got to stick with the mission. You promised Hera you'd stick with the mission.
Yeah, she is good at that. Mm-hmm. It's funny. There were even a couple of scenes in these episodes where Sabine is shouting and her voice as she's shouting sounds just like Hera.
Ah,
you funny. Know, you can yeah. like hear the influence of her actual mom mm-hmm. as she's turning into a cool, fierce, awesome, you know, mom-ish character.
Yeah. She's coming to her own as a young woman and a rebel, high-powered agent, just taking ranks in rebel saboteur.
Yeah. It's very cool.
It is cool.
Who did you pick?
I am adding Fen Rao to the entry.
Fascinating.
One thing that I always appreciate, I'll talk with someone and I'll disagree with them. But if they came by their opinions honestly, you know, if they like worked out logically what's going on with what they want, and they're not just repeating other people's opinions, but they're like, I follow a code, my code dictates this, I've logically worked it out, and I disagree with you. I respect that. Mm-hmm. And I respect Fen Rao for following his code and coming back for the kids and being like, these children are under my protection, because for him, that is taking the oath. That was the moment where it actually changed, is when he said, as the protector of Concord Dawn, as the protector of the legacy of Mandalore, I am protecting these two young kids in the rebellion. And I think that that speaks in a way that is at like this meta-Manda narrative, the Mandalorian narrative layer, where all of this other like nobility, royalty, clan kind of stuff is happening. And it makes it actually really impactful. And he showed up in this fight. He picks up like, once he gets to Concord Dawn, he like picks a helmet up off the ground and it like, that's all he has for the entire fight. He doesn't have a gun. He gets the ship. He's just like, he's in handcuffs most of the time.
And he does some awesome jiu-jitsu.
He beats the crap out of a super commando using jiu-jitsu. Like, and all he's wearing is a helmet. Like, that's all he needs. That's what makes him a Mandalorian.
Mm.
And I think that that's cool.
It's like how Sabine didn't need her blasters to take down Gar Saxon. She does it with her fists.
Yes. And I think that that shows so much about Mandalorians in general. And I also, there's a funny little bit here. Ezra, like, when he is able to use his lightsaber, he's like, that's two. Okay, I got to turn my lightsaber off. He turns his lightsaber on for 6 seconds and gets two kills. Like, he's very scary. It shows that, like, a Jedi is definitely the natural predator to Mandalorians. But when they're fighting amongst themselves, someone who, I mean, what has Fen Rao been doing? He's been playing Mandalorian chess and doing push-ups in his cell. And he's like, still got it, baby.
Sharpening his mind and his bod.
Still got it, baby. So I appreciate that. And I think that this is a, once you've convinced someone like that to be on your side and they're like truly in it, they're in it.
Yeah, he will now apply all of his strategy and wit and battle prowess to the rebels, which is great because we have Thrawn this season.
And in a dogfight between two starfighters, Fen Rao is a better pilot than Hera. So,
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he clobbered her.
He's scary.
He is good at stuff.
And he was a pretty good grown-up this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got there eventually. He took the scenic route.
He took the scenic route.
But he came back for the kids.
Yeah. Bonus nod to Ezra for being the audience stand-in in Iron Squadron and being like, here's all we've learned over the last 3 1/4 seasons.
Oh, well, bonus nod for Chopper. This could have been a Chopper.
This could have
week.
Been a Chopper episode.
Chopper
yeah.
is great.
Chopper, I almost picked Chopper.
Chopper, me too.
Chopper for flying through the canyon, being like, everyone's shooting at me, and I'm sitting here trying to do radio triangulation, and everyone's yelling at me, and Ezra's landing on me.
Like a surfboard.
And then he's like, and this stupid droid who I keep punching. And we're in charge of detaching this mine. And then, like...
Chopper does so great.
Gets shocked. Yeah, it's fun.
Well, thanks for tuning in to, apparently, Mandalorian Watch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I really appreciate that we are exploring that. Having Sabine be a Mandalorian really opens up the floodgates. And, like... This is what led to the TV show The Mandalorian. I know it doesn't quite seem like that, but this is the seeds of that being planted that the people love Mandalorians.
By the people, you mean Anna.
And me.
And Sam.
And other viewers of Rebels as we move on. So, yeah.
We heart Mandalorians.
We heart Mandalorians. They're fun.
Sam.
Yes.
What are we watching next week?
We are watching season 3, episodes 9 and 10, the Wincathu job.
Nice. Yeah. That looks right.
That looks like how it's spelled. It's a space word. Space Wyoming.
H's are all silent.
They kind of always are. And and the Inside Man. So,
The thumbnail for the Inside Man is Thrawn. And so that doesn't make me feel good at all.
Anyway, join us next week for that. And also join us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Threads.
We are also on Patreon, where for as little as $3 a month, you can become one of our monthly patrons, and you can get access to our entire backlog of audio content, where we are currently recapping Visions Season 2.
So join us there.
And if you are interested in tooting our horn as Growing Up Skywalker, make sure you drop us 5 stars on the platform of podcasting that you listen to and leave us a little love note too. It really helps us get in the earbuds of new listeners.
And send this episode to your local Mandalorian Union Hall.
Okay, Sam.
Or your friendly neighborhood droid.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, send it to your Roomba.
Yeah.
And then they shall rise up, get rid of their restraining bolt, and take over the galaxy.
Yeah.
As they were meant to all along.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Yeah.